Bonjour, 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 and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, the title will go and explain everything for you. You got the animation, and you got the podcast. Mix that all together, and you got this little piece of beauty right over here, which will star me, of course. But specifically, we shall be going and discuss about the latest news that has happened this week. So first and foremost, I'm going to be talking about the most orange animated series that will ever be released. Then afterwards, we will be looking at an insane trailer. Like, this is legit something you gotta see to believe. Then afterwards, we will be looking into Guillermo del Toro and just simply him asking for $35 million for an animated feature. Then afterwards, we will be talking about a Simpsons composer that just recently got fired. And then finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, which is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And so, for our first story that we got right over here, we shall be discussing about politics! Yes, we're getting right into that subject right over there. And I am pretty sure that some of you listening to this are a little bit triggered by the moment that I just said that. And some of you are probably thinking, why does Animat have to keep talking about politics? Oh my god, I just feel so offended right now just the fact that he says it. This is the Animation Podcast, not the Politics Podcast. Why don't Animat just talk about the latest animated series instead of talking about politics?
Well, that's kind of funny, dear little listener. Because the thing is, with this little bit of news, is that I'm exactly doing my job here. I am talking about a new animated show. It just so happens that Lumpy Trumpy happens to be in it. Not the real Donald Trump, but just the real subject at hand. And what I'm talking about here is that Showtime has officially greenlit a little animated series, just 10 episodes long, that will be all about the Trump White House. So just a satirical look into the Trump presidency. And this is all brought to us by executive producer Stephen Colbert. Now, if I may go in my source here on Variety discussing about this, the untitled series will span 10 episodes and will air this fall. Production will ramp up quickly and wrap close to the premiere date in order to enable the show to stay relevant with current events and Trump's continuing antics. It also continues on over here saying that the series will revolve around the two-dimensional avatars of Donald Trump and his family members. Described as a fresh, cutting-edge comedy, the series will present the true-ish adventures of Trump's confidants and bon vivants, with family, top associates, head of government, golf pros, and anyone else staying into his orbit, interpretly exploring their histories and their psyches, revealing insights into what makes them so definitely Trumpian. It is a workplace comedy where the office happens to be oval, it's a character study in search of character, and seen through the eyes of an imaginary documentary crew. So in a way, just think about an animated Office, or think about the 2015 Muppets series. So it's going to be in the style of that, but it features an animated Trump administration and also with the Trump family and all that kind of stuff. That's basically the whole idea here. And for me, when I read through this and I learned about what this is all about, is that this is basically South Park, the Donald Trump edition, both in terms of the satirical tone of what the show is aiming for, and also the way that they are made. Now, for those of you who don't know, the way that South Park would make their episodes is that it's actually extremely quick. They would actually make their episodes on the week of its release. So, like, once the episode is done, they start thinking about what would be the next episode, think about the topics that they can discuss about, and then 1 week later, they would go and make all the animations and do the voiceovers and all that kind of stuff and release it during that time. So production basically is that they have to really cut more corners than any other animated series in order to stay as relevant as possible. And with the case right over here, considering that they are making a TV show about Donald Trump and that they want to stay relevant, that's pretty much the only way that they can make this series, is that they seriously have to cut around corners and pretty much try to make the episode as close to the day of its release date as possible. Like I said, pretty much do in the veins of South Park, where they only have a week to make the episode and then just release it once those 7 days are done. And the reason why I say this is because when it comes to the Trump presidency, everything that happens just feels like time just goes a lot slower than it seems. There is so much controversies and so much chaos happening in the White House. It feels like something that happened only a few weeks ago felt like something that happened several months ago. Because just in 1 month alone, Trump can make as much controversies as much as Obama did throughout his entire 8 years of him being as president. And a good example that I can give out, do you guys remember the whole incident with Charlottesville? Now, that is a very tragic event. It's very heartbreaking to see how that thing is entirely going on. But this really was so damaging to Trump's image. Because not only do you have all those highly conservative people, rather it be like the far right, what are they called? The Confederates, the alt-right, the Klansmen, the white supremacists, and the Nazis. Like, part of it is that they were all doing it in Trump's name. In fact, a horrible human being called David Duke even stated that they were doing this all in the name of Donald Trump to advance his racist agenda. His words, not mine. And on top of that, the way that Trump really screwed up during that time is that he failed to actually condemn the people who caused all the violence. He pretty much stated that, oh, the violence is caused on both sides. That is bullcrap. That is a flat-out lie. Okay? It's not anybody in the left. It's not Heather Heyer. It's not Antifa that's at fault here. There's only one group to blame, and that is anybody who lean in the far right. And how the fridge is it impossible for Trump to actually condemn those people, to condemn the KKK? How can he not condemn Nazis? How can he not condemn the alt-right? I mean, for God's sakes, it seems like the easiest thing to do, but he failed to do so. And it makes him and the entire GOP look like a bunch of freaking Nazis. It's like Donald Trump is freaking Hitler 2.0, and the entire GOP is a freaking Nazi party entirely, which really did cripple his image. And it was something that he really did screw up there, that only an inbred redneck would believe his words that, oh, both sides are at fault because they're freaking violent. It's like absolutely ridiculous. And who would be stupid enough to actually buy his freaking words? But I'm getting a little bit sidetracked here. The reason why I bring this up, like I said before, this was an event that only happened a few weeks ago. But considering there has been so much crap happening afterwards, so much, again, so much chaos, so much controversies, more advancements on and updates on what's going on with the Mueller investigation, there have been so many things happening that what happened at Charlottesville felt like it happened an entire season ago. So that's kind of the big thing. So if this TV show right over here really wants to stay relevant when it comes to the events of Donald Trump, then they have to talk about the events that happened this week. Because that's the thing with Trump. Every week is a new crazy controversy and a new screw up that Trump would make to really ruin his image. Like, for example, if Stephen Colbert and his crew wants to make a Trump episode right now, he would have to make it related to Hurricane Harvey. Now, what happened there, it really was sad. It really was a massive disaster. And I really do wish all those Texans the best of luck. I donated to the Red Cross. So, you know, I really do wish them the best of luck. And hopefully their lives can recuperate and that things can go only uphill for them. Now, with that said, when it comes to Hurricane Harvey, they got to do an episode about that and how Trump pretty much screwed up that whole scenario as well. That not only did he not care about anybody who got hurt at Hurricane Harvey and didn't even took the time to actually see the people in there, but also he seems to care more about his useless racist border wall than actually funding some money to spend billions of dollars to actually help out the Texans and Hurricane Harvey. That's the kind of like mental disorder that we should be looking into in there. But again, overall with this is that I feel like with the way that they're pretty much building this up with the Trump animated series is that they're pretty much doing South Park, but the Donald Trump edition. And basically, we might as well have a Trump edition of South Park because we know that South Park themselves are way too chicken to even do that. I mean, like, a lot of people claim that they're the ones who really caused all this entire mess, and they're not even willing to own up to it. So, yeah. So, I guess for many people, this could be an alternative to South Park. But yeah, we don't know when specifically this is going to be coming out, but we know that Showtime is going to be releasing this sometime this fall to see the cartoony shenanigans of Donald Trump. Now, our next story that we got right over here, we're going to be talking about a movie I have previously discussed in this podcast, but we are seeing a little bit more of what this is all about. And oh boy, the new things that we are seeing about this thing. I'm just going to say this right now. It is crazy. Nothing short but crazy. And what I am talking about is a movie called Pica-Pau o Filme. And if you don't know what that is the Brazilian live-action CGI hybrid feature of Woody Woodpecker. Yes, Woody Woodpecker is finally getting his own movie, but like I said before, one, it's only Brazilian, and two, it's a live-action CGI hybrid in the veins of, like, Smurfs and, what other bullcrap is there? Like, Yogi Bear, or even Alvin and the Chipmunks. You know, those garbage movies. But, the thing is, with Pica-Pau right over here, is that they actually released the trailer of it, and before I get into that, let me just tell you a little bit of the specifics into this Woody Woodpecker movie. You see, this film is actually directed by Alex Zam, and his previous works are mostly direct-to-video sequels like Inspector Gadget 2, Beverly Hills Chihuahua 2, and Jingle All the Way 2. The last time that he actually had a movie release in theaters was actually Chairman of the Board starring Carrot Top. And the story right over here, it really isn't that much. I mean, for the most part, what this trailer delivered us is this 90-minute cartoon. Like, it's not really going to focus much onto the story, but mostly looking into Woody Woodpecker's crazy antics. That and also the plot itself, I mean, it's very dull, it's very generic. It's basically the same lazy story that we have heard over and over again, that this is nature versus industrialism, where apparently there's these group of construction workers that are trying to make something in Woody Woodpecker's forest, and he ain't having it and decided he's just gonna cause an entire ruckus all around the construction site and screw around with the manager. That's basically the entire story that we got right over here. So from the sound of it, it's really not that much. It just sounds like a generic movie made for kids that just stars a popular cartoon icon and nothing more. So basically, it is in the exact same veins of those garbage movies I've mentioned before, like Alvin and the Chipmunks, Yogi Bear, and the Smurfs. However, the trailer itself, holy crap, it is crazy. Conceptually, it is dull as tar, but in execution, it is pure freaking madness. Because this trailer pretty much highlights all the crazy things that actually happened with Woody Woodpecker and how he is screwing around with all those people. Down to the point that you don't know whether if you want to laugh or you're just scared to bits because it is so dangerous as hell. And some of the things that I can think on top of my head of what just happened is that Woody Woodpecker decided to pretty much take like this entire cement mix and pour it onto the villain and his girlfriend's car. And pretty much going out to just cement them, which, yeah, it's very confusing and I don't know if it's safe. And then there's another one where Woody would legit electrocute a construction worker down to the point where we would even see his entire bone. So that guy would be dead. And there are several accounts of Woody Woodpecker pecking on some people, which it's really surprising that they don't actually come out with blood in their heads or just you see any damage. So yeah. Oh, but oh my god, especially the craziest thing, of course, has to be Woody Woodpecker himself. The animation on him, like they legit make him look like an entire psychopath. I can imagine that someone would actually be capable of taking this trailer and turn it into a slasher horror film. Like, just portray Woody Woodpecker like the next Norman Bates, or the next Freddy Krueger, or the next Jason Voorhees, where you just see Woody Woodpecker kill off all these random people in this forest. Oh my god, actually, you know what? Come to think of it, that's basically what this movie is. It's a horror film disguised as a family comedy cartoon. That's what it's all about. I mean, you got all these random people in the forest. You got all these human characters that nobody would ever give a crap about. And the star of the film is actually the killer that's going into these... That's pretty much trying to kill off all these people in the craziest and creative ways. It truly is insane. And I mean, I remember when I saw this on Cartoon Brew, like they put up this article and they put up this pretty clickbaity type of title saying that you need to see the trailer for the live action CG hybrid of Woody Woodpecker. And honestly, like, I don't know, it seemed like a turnoff for me, but then when I saw the trailer myself, yeah, this is the kind that you gotta see to believe. But then there's also another big factor is actually Woody Woodpecker himself. And honestly, the way that they pretty much portrayed Woody Woodpecker in this movie, at least visual-wise, I am honestly very mixed because there are some very good factors about it. And there are some factors that are very cringeworthy as an animation enthusiast myself. And I will say right now is that not only did they actually release a new trailer, they also released some posters in which we do actually see some close-ups of Woody Woodpecker himself. Now, let me just start things off with the bad ones because it's better off to end off on a positive note. Now, the one thing I will say that is actually really bad is regarding the textures. And I understand that this is like a live action CGI hybrid. So of course that would require turning a cartoon character into something that feels like he would fit more in our human world. And the problem with it is that they go way too much in the details. And I mean, like they try to add in too many textures where it feels like it's pretty unappealing. Like, I don't mind the feathers at all. Like, that one, I understand. It's similar to what they did with the Angry Birds movie, where they add in all these realistic feathers on characters that pretty much came out of a game on your mobile phone. But the biggest problem that I have is that, number one, like, when you look at his feet and you look at his beak, and especially there's this one poster right over here that they really do give you a major close-up of Woody Woodpecker, is that it looks like it's molding. It looks like something is wrong with it. It just looks unappealing, and it looks like something that it could just be easily taken off. Like, there's definitely something wrong with that, and it shows that it has this unappealing age to it. And probably the worst thing that I will say about this design, it has to be the eyes. Because for some reason, on this cartoony-looking design, they have to add in these hyper-realistic irises. And this is honestly an animation pet peeve of mine. When they would have these cartoony designs on these characters, but then they would add in these realistic human eyes, that just makes the designs absolutely worse. And this is a major problem for me, because if there's one thing that you cannot screw up in terms of a character design, it has to be the eyes, because the eyes are the portal to the character's soul. Now, I understand that, like, there have been a lot of computer animated films that do that, but there is a bit of a limit that when you're trying to do something that's a little bit more cartoony, you shouldn't really put emphasis on trying to make these hyper-realistic, detailed irises on the eyes. It just doesn't work. In fact, that's one of the big reasons why the character designs from Sony Pictures animation movies are just absolutely horrible. Like, from the Smurfs films, the Hotel Transylvania films, and the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs films. Like, not only do their designs look like they belong in a cheap Saturday morning cartoon with a budget of like $5 or something like that, but at the same time, they try to add these realistic irises just to give out that 3D feeling, and it just makes it look horrible. Like, that's why it makes their designs look unwatchable. It's just, there's so much wrong with those designs, especially on the eyes, how they would make them so big, and you would see the detailed irises that they put in there. It's just wrong, and, like, this is really screwing up animation character design 101 right over here. And it's the same thing with Woody Woodpecker. Like, they gave him these giant eyes and these unappealing irises. But there are also some positives as well. There are some things, even though that this design really did screw up, there is also some elements that they really succeeded so well in this design. Like, number one, the overall design of Woody Woodpecker himself, like, taking the 2D animated character from the 50s and the 40s and just turning it into live action, yes, this is the kind of thing that they should do. Like, it does work technically. There's possibly no other way that you can do that. Well, of course, like, really tone down on the freaking textures, but other than that, design-wise, with the look of the character, like, it's undeniably Woody Woodpecker. And also, I will say, the character animation in here, like, it is really cartoony, it is over the top, but it is in a way that it really is so much fun. Like, this is the kind that you could tell is just so crazy, but you could tell that it's more bursting with energy. This is really a lot of fun, and you could tell that this is something the animators had a lot of fun working with. And yeah, I think that's kind of the whole thing with Woody Woodpecker, is that there are some details on him that look absolutely disgusting, but like, the overall design of the character and the execution on the animation, I feel like they really nailed it. It really looks like a lot of fun, and they really did nail what Woody Woodpecker should be in computer animation. Like, if ever comes the day that there would be a fully animated Woody Woodpecker, maybe they'll fix up on the little details, but it should be something like that. Like, they really did do a good job. And it's something that reminds me a bit more like the animation on Chuck from the Angry Birds movie. And say what you will about the Angry Birds movie, yeah, it kind of, like, it's not that good of a film, but the animation in there, I gotta say, is absolutely stellar. And that's what it kind of reminds me of. You know, they really did nail a lot of the aspects on the animation on Woody. But yeah, overall, this is just me saying that you guys seriously gotta see this trailer of Pica-Pau o Filme. And honestly, I do hope that they actually do release this sometime in the US. Maybe they will. I heard they might do it as a direct-to-video movie. But honestly, this is the kind of thing that you don't want to miss, because yes, it is a bad movie, but from the looks of things, this looks like it could be so stupid and so bad that, my God, it could be so entertaining. So yeah, if you coincidentally are in Brazil during the fall time and you are excited to go and check out Pica-Pau o Filme, then all you have to do is wait until October 5th for Universal to release this piece of madness onto Brazil. And my God, it definitely does feel so weird saying that, considering how October 5th is my birthday. And apparently, at that time, that's when Brazil is going to be invaded by the chaos of Woody Woodpecker. Now, our next story right over here, we're going to be talking about Guillermo del Toro. And as you may probably know, Guillermo del Toro is definitely a familiar name now in movies, especially when he is building himself as an acclaimed auteur. And right now, he is actually at the Venice Film Festival premiering his movie, The Shape of Water. But apparently during that time, he actually discussed with some people about one of the many projects that he wanted to do. And if there's one thing you know about Guillermo del Toro, is that there are a lot of movies that he wanted to make. Rather it be a film adaptation of At the Mountain of Madness, or even a reboot of The Haunted Mansion, this one actually is an entire animated feature of Pinocchio. But this time, it's actually a little bit more different. You see, the thing is that Guillermo del Toro has everything ready to go and create the movie. He has the sets prepared. He has all the puppets ready, which, by the way, yes, this is actually a stop-motion film. And he has the script ready, in which the last time we've had any updates on this is that Guillermo del Toro actually collaborated with Over the Garden Wall creator Patrick McHale in order to go on the script. So he has the sets, he has the puppets, he has the script ready. All he needs now is just someone to give him $35 million. Which, by the way, is easier said than done. Because the big thing about this is that this is not a direct adaptation of Pinocchio. Basically, what Guillermo del Toro is trying to do with this adaptation is that he wants to make a Pinocchio that is set during the rise of Mussolini. And if you guys don't know who Mussolini is, he is actually one of the biggest figures during World War II, or at least among the bad guys. He was actually known to be a major, major ally to Hitler during World War II. And so let me go into this quote here about what Guillermo del Toro said about trying to find a financier here. He stated, "I've been looking for financing for almost 10 years. We have the puppets, we have the design. I almost always complicate my life. None of the movies I want to do are easy, and they don't belong to anyone wanted to do at the time. No one wanted to do superheroes when I did Hellboy. No one wanted to do monsters when I did Pacific Rim. When I announced Pinocchio, I got many calls. Yeah, but it said during the rise of Mussolini. It's an anti-fascist Pinocchio." And then they hang up. "If you have $35 million and you want to make a Mexican happy, here I am." So in short, people, yes, this is actually the Antifa version of Pinocchio. But there's one thing that I want to keep in mind now before anybody would go and jump to conclusions. Because the thing is with this version of Pinocchio, it's not mainly because of this current political climate that people are stepping back from actually doing this Pinocchio. It's not like Guillermo del Toro said that, hey, I'm gonna do an Antifa Pinocchio and then they hang up, considering that nowadays Antifa is a little bit of a controversial figure in this politically intense world right over here. I mean, sure, like, they definitely are the good guys. Like, anybody can tell, like, anybody intelligent can know that they are actually good. They are more peaceful, and they stand for everything that America is for, and that they pretty much stand for everything that Trump and all his supporters are basically against, which is pretty much fascism. But some of their tactics, admittedly, they can be a little bit controversial, but just keep in mind, though, they are the good guys. They are trying to help actually make America great again. But it's not because of, like, the whole crazy Antifa thing that's going right now why he can't help getting financing. The big key phrase that Guillermo del Toro said in all this is the fact that he's trying to look for financing for almost 10 years. And that's mainly because with this subject, I don't think he's really making a kids movie per se. Like, this is the kind where the subject matter just feels a little too heavy for financiers to really back up on this Pinocchio movie. I mean, this is discussing about some pretty big subjects, like about the rise of Mussolini, the rise of fascism, and how this version of Pinocchio is going out of his way to stop it, or pretty much seeing how this fascism right over here is basically wrong. So that's kind of the hard selling point, and maybe Guillermo del Toro is using the wrong choice of words in order to do so. But he did also mention that apparently the things that he wants to do, like, he would be a little bit ahead of his time. Like, with Hellboy, nobody wanted to do superheroes, but then nowadays it's, like, kind of the biggest thing right now. Or with Pacific Rim, nobody wanted to do monsters, but everybody is so much in love right now with Godzilla and Kong Skull Island. So, with this entire Pinocchio movie, it could be possible that in the future, once Donald Trump would be impeached and that Nazis can finally be afraid once again to speak up about their beliefs, and if they do so, then they'll be socially exiled from the world. Like, once that time could happen, maybe anti-fascist movies can become a big trend again. So it's just a matter of time of when someone would be willing to do so. But I think another big thing about it is actually the factor that this is a stop-motion animated film. And nowadays, stop-motion films, especially with what we saw with Kubo and the Two Strings, they're not really that commercially viable. Like, again, going back into Kubo and the Two Strings, that one is a movie that really is massively successful critically-wise. Like, anybody who has seen this movie, like, with audiences or with critics, they absolutely adored the film, and they would even say that it's easily one of the best animated films from last year. However, financially, it really didn't make that much. I think it was actually a box office flop, sadly. So, even if Guillermo del Toro is just asking for $35 million, which seems to be relatively cheap for an animated film, it is still a pretty big gamble for a computer animated film, and especially something that has a pretty heavy subject like going into anti-fascism. That's gonna be a massively hard sell, but who knows how this is going to go. I definitely am interested to see what this is all about, so who knows how it's going to go, but let's just wish the best of luck for Guillermo del Toro to actually find that $35 million. Now, our next story that we have right over here, this is just a little piece of news that pretty much exploded onto the internet. That's something that people noticed, that a big player has officially been dropped out from the entire game. And what I'm talking about is, of course, about Alf Clausen. Now, if you guys don't know, I'm just going to say this right now. Alf Clausen is regarded as one of the most respected musicians in television animation, considering that he has worked on The Simpsons for 27 years. Ever since season 2, he has done so much music for The Simpsons, and not only that, but even receiving so many awards. May I go in my source here on the Variety? It pretty much stated that Clausen, whose Emmy record includes 2 wins in 1997 and 98, and another 21 nominations for The Simpsons dating back to 1992, has scored more than 560 episodes of the series, starting early in the 1990-1991 season. He is believed to be the most nominated composer in Emmy history, with a total of 30 nominations, and on top of that, he has also won 5 Annie Awards, all for his Simpsons music. His long tenure with the series has made him one of the most respected creators of animation music in TV history. So that's basically the whole thing about Alf Clausen. So what's up with him? Well, apparently he got fired. Yes, believe it or not, going back in my source here onto Variety, stating that Clausen told Variety that he received a call from Simpsons producer Richard Sakai that the company was seeking a different kind of music and that he would no longer be scoring the longtime Fox hit. Clausen's last complete score for the series was for the season finale of season 28, which aired back in May. The season premiere is stated to be on October 1st, but it has not yet clear who will be scoring that episode. And regarding all this, the big controversy that is going on, or the big rumor that's been spreading around, is that apparently they have stated that it could be possible that Clausen got fired because of financial purposes. Like, Fox is continuously searching to go and make cheaper episodes of The Simpsons, and this could be a strategy to let him go to not only find someone new, but to find someone cheaper. That basically the legacy of The Simpsons and to maintain all of its originality is no longer relevant. And let's just speak hypothetically, if it is true that they decided to pretty much fire Clausen to cut down costs. Now, at that point, I feel like that's the moment where the next one that Fox is going to be aiming to remove and to replace, it's going to be the voice actors. And the reason why I say that is because when it comes to all the voice actors in there, like Yardley Smith, Dan Castellaneta, Nancy Cartwright, Hank Azaria, and all those people, they don't come cheap. Like, they're almost making as much money as professional athletes do. Like, their contract, they demanded that they would actually get a paycheck of more than $1 million per season. That is actually even more than what some celebrities make when voicing for an animated feature by a major animation studio. Like, that's some pretty big money right over there. So it could be possible that the firing of Clausen could be a test to see that if it really does matter, that if they change the person to do something apart in the audio, so that maybe they can go and fire some of the voice actors and replace them with someone cheaper. That could be a possibility. But again, this is all just rumors, and maybe it is true that they're just trying to find someone to go and replace and get a new tone for the music for this day and age of The Simpsons. But I will say right now, when it comes to Alf Clausen, the legacy that he has left on The Simpsons, it's a lot bigger the more that I would think about it. It really is big. because one of the big defining moments for him is not just doing those little musical scores in between commercials and all that kind of stuff, but keep in mind, there are a lot of great musical moments onto The Simpsons, and that guy played a huge part of it. Rather it be with Mr. Burns singing See My Vest, or the monorail song, or anything like that, this guy is hugely responsible to make it feel so grand, to make it feel so big. Or another great example would be the Quickie Mart song, like Who Needs the Quickie Mart? Like, those are great moments from The Simpsons, and especially with the orchestra score that Alf Clausen has done in there, it really does make it feel so grand. It makes it feel like an entire Broadway show, but animated. It really was well done. And it is pretty sad to see him go after all these years that he has contributed to The Simpsons. Like, he really was a huge, huge player. And it really is too bad to see him go. And it does leave you wondering who else is going to be in the cutting room floor just for Fox to continuously make more Simpsons episode. Like, who knows how far they're going to go with it just to really continue grinding The Simpsons to just not stop the entire show. I don't know how that's going to happen, but is it really going to be that big of a change? I honestly don't know, but we'll just have to wait and see when they bring in someone new on the 29th season of The Simpsons, which is going to air on October 1st. And now it is time that we shall go and end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And for this week, we are going to be taking a break from looking into any of the big aspects of movies and TV shows in animation. This is not going to be related to some big name. This is not going to be related to a big cartoon star. This is not going to be related to any big name celebrities or big name directors attached to it. And this is not related to any big name series in there. This is actually all dedicated to the small artists and animators, the ones that are just trying to get by and pretty much try their hardest to make a living, rather it be working on some small indie projects or working through commissions on DeviantArt and all that kind of stuff. This is something that is completely dedicated to them. And apparently what happened was that they decided to all come together in order to create this one amazingly big project. And what I am talking about is something that is called the Mama Luigi Project. Now, let me just read a little excerpt here on my source in GoNintendo.com stating, "The Mama Luigi Reanimate Collab, in honor of one of the most famous episodes of the animated deep classic Super Mario World, gets a reanimated remix. Over a year in the making, with over 227 participating artists and animators that helped recreate 255 total scenes." Now, this was something that was completely organized by one LA artist known as Andrew Dickman. He decided to bring in all these artists and animators to come work together in order to animate a few seconds of a scene from this episode of Super Mario World, all about the one that's about Mama Luigi. And chances are, if you've been traveling all around the internet for years, then the Mama Luigi episode might be familiar. It's something that a lot of people love to use in order to remix or just make YouTube poops out of. And like it said, it's one of the most famous episodes from any of the Mario animated series. It's the one where Luigi tells a bedtime story to Yoshi of how Luigi discovered Yoshi, and how him, Mario, and Yoshi would all collaborate in order to defeat Bowser and save Princess Peach, or in this case, Princess Toadstool. And honestly, with what they have done here, this is another true sight to behold, a little bit similar to the Woody Woodpecker Brazilian trailer that we got. But unlike that one, there's nothing bad about this. This is actually really amazing. And with all this, I feel like this is a little bit similar to something from the recent Planet of the Apes trilogy, where you would see all these people, they would do this gesture of holding their fists together to make it look like they're holding a bunch of sticks and they're unable to break it, to make it a symbolism of together we are strong. And that's what I'm basically seeing in here. Basically, you got all these artists and animators working together, doing their best to just bring out their style and really unleash their craft, and to really make one segment of this Mario episode like really do stand out. And it's amazing the fact that they brought in over 220 artists onto this. That is quite phenomenal, I must say. Just bringing all these people to work together on this. Now, technically, this is not the first time I've seen something like this before. Just recently in the summer, there was something called Animate a Grump, which is something that is entirely dedicated to the 5th anniversary of the YouTube channel Game Grumps, where several artists decided to come together in order to create an entire, to go and animate an entire episode of Game Grumps. And it really was fascinating to look into, considering that with Game Grumps, all you see is just gameplay footage and you just hear Aaron and Dan talking, but then you got the imagination of all these artists and animators coming together to go and bring this gameplay, you know, to pretty much bring this Let's Play video to life in a brand new way. And it was absolutely phenomenal to watch. And I think the beauty of all this, rather it be with that video or with this one, with the Mama Luigi project, it's the beauty of seeing animators working together to create this one big project. Because in a way, that's what animation is all about. This is about teamwork. It's about unity. And it's about, of course, diversity, considering that we're seeing so many different styles happening all at once. This is not necessarily a linear project that they're all working with this one big style to tell one, to tell this one big story. This is the stars right over here are all the artists and animators pretty much unleashing their own creativity, unleashing their own style onto what has happened. And it really is funny and enjoyable to watch all these different styles that's been happening. There are some that you would see that Luigi is all buffed up and super sexy. And then there's other moments where Luigi is absolutely cartoony, like out of a Ren and Stimpy cartoon. And there are so many different examples, and this is something that definitely is worth watching and absolutely enjoyable to watch. And I definitely have to applaud Andrew Dickman and all the artists and animators who actually worked on this. This is just quite an awesome job, and it really does bring in a new level of comedy onto this episode of Mama Luigi. So this is definitely artists and animators doing their best on their craft, just presenting them on the internet just for the love of animation and for the love of what they do. I mean, this is just definitely a lot of fun to watch, and I highly recommend you guys to go and see it. And that is all I've got for this week, so I just want to say thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. Now, you can go find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Metzger Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast in iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little bit of a favor and rate and review this episode? That would be lovely. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, go and hit that like button in our video and leave us a comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next week, see you later, dudes.